Support for WPR comes from Lawrence University in Appleton, a national liberal arts college and conservatory, offering an engaging global education with funding for internships, research, study abroad, and more. Lawrence.edu. Support for WPR comes from the American Society of Landscape Architects Wisconsin chapter, dedicated to reimagining the design of outdoor spaces for the well-being of all. Examples at wiasla.com.
Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, August the 28th. There is a race to become the first state in the nation to hold a primary in the race for 2008. The race for president. Florida has moved its primary up to January 29th and seems to be snubbing its nose at a threat by the Democratic National Committee to strip it of its primary delegates if it doesn't move it back. South Carolina then moved its GOP primary to January 19th from January 29th to preserve its first in the South status. Michigan is considering a bill to move its state's primary to January 15th, which would probably prompt New Hampshire to move its primary to at least January 8th. And that could mean Iowans could caucus in late 2007 to follow a state law, though the governor is promising to keep Iowa caucuses in January, but it's likely to be very early in January. We'll talk about why there is this push to be the first in the nation and what this is doing to Decision 2008 and whether we will have nominees in both parties by February 6th, following the 20 or so other states that have decided to move up their primaries and caucuses to February 5th. Who stands to gain and who stands to lose from this front-loaded calendar? And is there a better way? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest this hour is Chap Rackaway, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Fort Hays State University in Hays, Kansas. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Nice to be back.
Yeah, thanks a lot for being back with us.
So, my pleasure.
Why are so many states doing this, clamoring to be the first with a primary in early 2007?
Well, the states themselves will tell you that it is a race to be first and a race to show the strength and the influence of their great state, when what it really is a race to the bottom. What they're trying to do is they're trying to have more influence not only in the nomination process, but they also know that Iowa and New Hampshire attract candidates and their campaigns. There's a significant amount of time spent in the state, a big bunch of staff that moves there, and of course they're renting places, staying in hotels, buying food. There's a significant amount of TV time that they're buying in their campaign. So it really becomes a cash cow for Iowa and New Hampshire to have all these candidates camped in their states for a long time. And what other states are hoping is that they're going to grab a piece of that action as well.
Yeah, but Iowa and New Hampshire have traditionally been the first in this process. Mm-hmm. Why are we seeing other states challenging that now?
Mm-hmm. Well, there had been just sort of an agreement that the Iowa and New Hampshire primaries would lead off the calendar. But what other states, particularly larger states like California and Florida, have been saying is we're much larger states, and they're also saying that they believe they're more representative of the U.S. as a whole, and so they would be better off being early in the process to share some of that power that they think is arbitrarily held by states like Iowa and New Hampshire.
Yeah, well, do they have a point?
A little bit. I'll tell you that the primary system in and of itself is seriously flawed in this country. There are few policy changes I can point to and say that they've caused as much damage to American democracy, to political parties, and to elections than primaries. They're a really bad scene, quite honestly. And So these states do have a bit of a point. The way they're going about it is all wrong, because they're undermining their national parties and the processes and traditions that they've had in. So it's another sort of stab to the political parties, and that, I think, is much more dangerous than any benefit that those state organizations would receive by moving their primaries forward.
Yeah, help me understand why the Democratic National Committee over the weekend decide to take away Florida's delegates for Florida's decision to move up its primary.
Absolutely. Well, Florida was following that same, you know, what I call the race to the bottom that that some of these other states, and you gave a great rundown mm-hmm. of all of the different states that have been trying to take a shot at this. But the when it comes down to the Democratic National Committee, they have rules set up in their convention delegate allocation process. You know, they not only say each state gets so many delegates in the convention, but they also state what the process is to achieve those delegates. And they have agreed that Iowa and New Hampshire should lead the national process. So they put them very, very early, and they write that into the rules. Florida, Michigan, and other states are violating that rule by trying to move their primaries forward of Iowa's. So it really just becomes a way of smacking these other states around a little bit for trying to jump ahead of Iowa in the process against the will of the party.
We are talking about the primary calendar chaos that is emerging in the 2008 race for president, with more and more states clamoring to be first. Florida and Michigan and others are trying to one-up their neighbors to vote first. We're talking about how this is shaping the campaigns, talking about how this might change the issues that are being discussed, and we'll wonder, is there a better way? Should Wisconsin join this fray? State officials here have said they're not about to. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. We welcome your thoughts, your reactions, and your questions for our guest. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with political science professor Chap Rackaway on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, August the 28th. Coming up this afternoon, it's John Munson in for Ben Marins after 4 o'clock. According to John's guest after 5, we are basically hunter-gatherers lost in a jungle of burgers, lounge chairs, and TV remotes. And while diet gurus urge us to listen to our bodies, our instincts are not designed for the food court, so we have to learn how to reprogram. He talks with the author of Wasteland after 5 o'clock this afternoon. We're talking primary politics, presidential politics, and the race by many states to become the first in the nation to vote in the 2008 presidential race. More and more states are rushing to be first. Florida has moved up its primary. Michigan is considering a bill to move up its primary. South Carolina is moving up its primary. And about 20 other states have already decided that they will hold their primaries and caucuses on February 5th. We're talking about who stands to gain and who stands to lose from this process, and wondering if there's a better way with our guest, Chap Rackaway, assistant professor of political science at Fort Hays State University. And we have an open line for you for your reactions and questions for our guest at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Professor Rackaway, you mentioned that there is a lot of damage being done by this kind of race to be first. What sort of damage? Why does this matter?
Well, the greatest problem is that if you were to talk to most people about what they see as the central problem in American elections, they're going to say, follow the money. They think there's too much money, there's too much interested money in politics. So let's take that as a given. There's nothing that expands or boosts the the amount of money needed to run a competitive campaign quite like the front-loaded primary system. Mm-hmm. Because right now, or prior to this year, a candidate could make sure that they camped in Iowa and New Hampshire, left their campaign staffs there, focused on those two states, and it was expensive, but they could get it done.
Mm-hmm.
Now with this front-loaded primary, particularly when you hit a date like February 5th, where each one of the parties is going to choose roughly half of their convention delegates, you're going to have a situation where they can't spend the amount of time on the ground in those states as they want to. They're going to need to buy a lot, and I mean a lot, of television time, and that's going to really, really expand the amount of money that they need to spend. On top of that, they'll need to hire more staff to be on the ground in those states to do the door-to-door stuff and the interpersonal stuff that a campaign needs to do. So you're requiring the candidates to raise a huge amount more money, which is why the chairman of the FCC, when he saw this coming, said that the sort of the barrier to entry or the price to be competitive in the primaries was going to be $100 million alone. $100 million is roughly what the Clinton campaign spent in 92 during the entire campaign. So now you're talking about an entire campaign costing just what a primary would. Mm-hmm. So the money factor involved in this is immense.
Yeah. Let's take some calls from listeners. Dennis in Chautauqua is first. Hi, Dennis. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning, Joy.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I see of kind of leveling that I have to be first, in every state is to have a lottery that for those first half a dozen positions, each election cycle. So it's not always the same state. You know, it's not always Iowa. It's not always New Hampshire. It just seems to make sense.
Yeah.
Let people's voices be heard around the country, not just those two. Everybody seems to think that if I get my voice heard first, I'll have the most influence on the system. And by the time 10 states have their primaries, it's pretty much a wash, and it's all locked up. So,
What about that, Professor Rackway? Some sort of lottery, or maybe isn't there a proposal to have regional primaries that might rotate?
That's correct, which is a little bit of a different spin on the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
I've not heard the lottery idea before, and your caller brings up a fascinating idea. The lottery actually might have a little bit of promise to it. I don't know if the parties would go for it, but if they were to, that would mix things up pretty well, and I really can't see a lot of negatives involved with it, except for the fact that the parties, because they're so hidebound, probably wouldn't go for it. But if they would, great idea. The regional primary is another idea that is not too bad, though I still have a bit of a struggle with anything where you have more than about three or four states holding their primary on the same day, because that compaction leads to the need for more TV time, the need for a lot more hired staff, and therefore a significant increase in money. It might soften this process that we've got now, this front loading, but it's not going to completely solve the problem.
Next, we go to Darrell in River Falls. Hi, you're on the air.
Morning. See a national primary where everybody goes at the same time, and basically everybody's responsibility to do their own research and their own candidate of choice. And then I'd rather see it ranked, where you have a basic instant runoff, so you pick your and rank your candidates. So I'd like to see first. So some of these guys that you normally would think can't win, you could still vote for them and get a better balance.
Thanks, Darrell. A reaction to that, Professor Rackaway?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, we'll set the national primary aside for a moment, because Darrell just hit the magic bullet. The idea of a ranked voting system is one of the best ideas that you can have. The Irish do a process called the single transferable vote that basically lets you rank order your candidates And so one candidate, you have a bunch of seats that you distribute in one of those. So it's different than our process. If we could adapt it in the U.S., it would be fantastic because it would let people nuance their vote a lot more. It would let them really say not just the top candidate that they prefer, but the candidates on down the line. So I'd love to see a system like that. I know that the parties would not go for it, so we're sort of having a pie in the sky there. But the idea of the national primary sort of balances that out, because with a national primary, now suddenly there's nobody on the ground, there's no door-to-door, it's all TV, and there's no chance for any of this sort of momentum shift that you have in the early primaries. You don't have something where Kerry, with a really, really good campaign, comes in 2004 and overtakes the Dean campaign in Iowa. You wouldn't have that at all. Everything would be about the build-up, and then that one day it would be over. So it would be expensive, and there'd be no momentum shift. There'd be no possibility for it. And there's also a question of whether the immediacy of a national primary would make it too hard for people to really get informed and know what they're doing in casting their vote nationwide. So there's a lot of concern that I have and that other political scientists have that we'd really expose our own national ignorance of our candidates if we had a national primary.
Next we go to Bob in Stevens Point. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
I saw a discussion over the weekend on Florida. Now, you take like what happened in Wisconsin. When we moved our primary from April to February, we didn't affect the cost to the local government that would have to run that election. Now, let's say Florida apparently is trying to do something, and the municipality say, well, who's going to pay for this election? I also think they considered a caucus. Maybe somebody from Iowa or the guest can explain. Who pays for a caucus? I get the impression the parties pay for it, and I'll hang up.
Mm-hmm. Professor Eckley? Hmm.
That's a great question, and unfortunately the answer is it depends. Every state has their own laws about how these things are administered, and most of the time when you have a ballot primary, then your Secretary of State's office is going to have a budget line to pay for those primaries. It's going to come out of your state coffers, so it's basically going to be tax dollar paid. Now, caucuses are a little bit cheaper than a ballot primary to operate, and sometimes the parties pay for them, sometimes the state governments pay for them, and sometimes it's the localities that pay for them. The way that your caller is describing it, it sounds like Florida's law says that the county pays for the individual caucus. And so that could be a way for states to shift their money burden, if you have a ballot primary, the state has to administer it, to a cheaper way, or cheaper for them, by shifting those costs onto the counties. So the short answer to the question is it depends. The more detailed answer to it is it would probably be a money shift, and that would be why a lot of local governments would be upset about it.
We're talking with Chap Rackaway, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Fort Hays State University in Hays, Kansas, about the race to be the first state in the nation to hold a presidential primary or caucus. We have now at least 33 states scheduling their presidential primaries before March 1st. About 20 of them plan to hold their primaries or caucuses on February 5th, and others are trying to place their primary before that. Is there a better way? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 6:36 on this Tuesday morning, August the 28th, and we are talking about the race to become the first state to hold a primary in the 2008 presidential race. Florida moved its primary up to January 29th, and it seems to be ignoring a threat by the Democratic National Committee that it will have its primary delegates stripped if it doesn't move it back. Michigan this week will consider a bill to move its state's primary up to January 15th. All of this would prompt New Hampshire to move its primary up because it wants to be the first in the nation. And then Iowa could move its caucuses up earlier because there's actually a state law that says Iowa will be the first in the nation. We're talking about why there is this push to be the first in the nation among states and what this is doing to race for president, and whether or not there's a better way to elect a president. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org and include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest analyzing this with us is Chap Rackaway, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Fort Hays State University in Hays, Kansas. And our next caller is Jay in Columbus. Hi, Jay, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I just work on the idea here that the founding fathers were put with a dilemma where they had to balance the populous states against the non-populous states, and they came up with a separate Congress and a separate Senate. And I think that the primaries are kind of in that same spirit, that the smaller states, by being early, get a chance to winnow out the strong candidates from the weak candidates and the candidates that more accurately reflect America. And when you have four states, California, New York, Ohio, and Florida, that can pretty much decide the election, by putting them up front, they're kind of getting an opportunity to cherry-pick the candidates that will only support those four states. And I just think it's a bad idea to put them up in front.
Mm-hmm. Professor Rackaway?
Well, he's right about the process of trying to counterbalance big states and small states. Now, that was never the intention of the primary election system. You know, quick history lesson on primaries. Primaries were originally created in this direct democracy push of the late 1800s, early 1900s. They didn't really take off until the 1970s, and they did that after the chaos of the 1968 Democratic Convention. Where you had Richard Daley in Chicago and any number of big local party bosses who were packing the conventions with their own cronies, and what primary elections were going on were being undermined. Their delegates didn't count, or they were being quashed by the insiders. The reforms that were passed were really to drive the conventions to be more popularly decided through these primary or caucus votes. That was their only intent. The states just sort of picked whatever date they felt like, usually whatever date coincided with the primary elections that they were already holding within that state. So there wasn't this intent to balance out small states and big states in creation of the primaries. It sort of just happened that way. But any given state that is losing out in the process is going to feel as though they're getting something taken away from them. And the problem is, unless you have the national system coordinating it, either the parties doing what the National Democratic Party is doing and trying to punish Florida for violating their rules, or you have some congressional proposal to set a calendar or set a rotating structure, you're always going to have this race among the individual states, because everyone thinks that their lovely state should be the first in the process because, well, we have the greatest state in the union, don't we?
Well, of course. Now, I know Wisconsin earlier, this was maybe, I don't know, years ago, moved its primary to February 19th. And with all this race to change it with other states this time around, our state officials have said, no, we're staying put. So what, are we alone in that?
you're a haven of sanity in an otherwise mad world. Because everyone else is going for it. Kansas, my state now, even considered moving things forward. Everyone has moved their primaries forward, basically, because you had a primary calendar that up until the 1980s stretched well into June and July. Mm-hmm. California's primary hasn't been until June before. Mm-hmm. And California just feels as though the convention is already decided, and so there isn't much attention paid to that, and all they're trying to do is drive more attention to their state for that 1 week or those 2 weeks when they become the most important primary on that calendar date. So there's really a desperation grab here on the part of all of these states. And Wisconsin has not bought into the hype, which is really good, because that's all it is now, is hype.
Well, isn't it true, though, with California and these, 19 other states or however many there are on this super-duper Tuesday on February 5th, and now...
We need a better name than super-duper Tuesday. Yeah. I don't know what it is. We need a better name than that.
Well, the nominees are gonna be picked by early February, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. On that day, each one of the parties, as I think I said earlier, is going to pick roughly 50% of the delegates for their conventions. In fact, I ran the numbers, and what we're looking at is on Tuesday, February 5th, 2008, 53.56% of the Democratic delegates and 52.13% of the Republican convention delegates are going to be chosen on that day alone. So if you have someone that even has a reasonable bit of momentum coming out of those early primaries, and assuming that the calendar stays the way that it is, that's going to be Iowa, it's going to be New Hampshire, it's going to be Florida and South Carolina. So if you have someone with momentum from those primaries, suddenly that super-duper Tuesday becomes an anointing of the nominee. Mm-hmm. We're done the first week of February.
Yeah.
And that's just insane. In 1960, John Kennedy didn't enter the primary contest until March. And now we're talking about having the nominee decided?
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's way too quick.
Yeah, this means that the long shot candidate or the lower tier candidate essentially has a much, much harder time.
Absolutely. There's almost no way for a Bill Clinton comeback kid kind of situation that we had in 1992, because anyone who looks at this calendar says, you can't come back from this. You can't win in this situation. If you don't have probably $75 million left over in the bank after Iowa and New Hampshire, you're out of the running. There's no way that you can compete on the 5th of February. You just can't do it. So it's going to make it more of a money chase, and it's going to make the personal characteristics of those candidates much less relevant. The things that we're supposedly voting on are going to fade into the background there.
Yeah. So with the DNC threatening, say, Florida for moving its primary up with stripping of its delegates for the primary, does that make the state less attractive to candidates to campaign there?
Well, it's not that it makes it less attractive to candidates, because candidates are going to chase votes all the time, and you never know when someone is going to make a decision and sort of double back from the stripping of its delegates. If this decision holds, though, then candidates have a real tough choice. Florida is the kind of state that is going to give you a lot of publicity, so even if you don't get much in the way of delegates there. Also remember that Florida is being moved to close to South Carolina's primary. So now you have two southern states. On the Democratic side particularly, Edwards should take it. So it might have a suppressive effect on Democrats and their campaigning down there. But with the Republican race, which is as wide open gets, you sort of have to chase every vote you possibly can. And so if I'm managing someone's campaign, I'm having a real debate right now about what to do about Florida, and I would be leaning towards going ahead and campaigning there for no other reason than you're saying things that are Southern populist. That's going to play well in the media, and you're getting on TV more.
Yeah. Our guest is Chap Rackaway, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Fort Hays State University in Hays, Kansas, talking with us about states across the nation rushing to be number one in holding a presidential primary or caucus. 1-800-642-1234, talking about the implications this has for the race for president for 2008, and also wondering whether there is a better way to hold a presidential election. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's about 12 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, August the 28th. After 7, we'll talk with a guest about the resignation of Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez and why that happened and who might replace him. That's coming up after 7 o'clock. Right now, we're talking with Chapman Rackaway, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Fort Hays State University in Hays, Kansas, about the primary calendar chaos that is emerging in the 2008 race for president, with more and more states rushing to be first. Florida and Michigan and others are trying to one-up each other and become the first in the nation. We're talking about how this is shaping the campaigns and the issues that are being discussed and wondering if there's a better way. 1-800-642-1234. We have a line open now for you in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org and include your first name and your community with your email. Professor Rackaway, we have Iowa actually has a law on the books that says we will be first no matter what, right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And if they actually followed that to a T, they could possibly be holding the Iowa caucuses in 2007.
That's right. It is a possibility. I think it's a bit of a long shot because states seem to be fearing a little bit what the DNC is doing with stripping Florida of its delegates. But you could see that that process move ever forward. And, of course, then you would probably see this process continue of leapfrogging, where if Iowa moves it back into, say, December 2007, then Florida, California may say, okay, we'll move it to early December, and then you're backing it into November and so on. And the next thing you know, you have primaries 2 years out from an actual election. I'm exaggerating a bit, of course, but that leapfrogging process of front-loading should tell you that the primary system really does have some major flaws in it. And if some of the articles in the popular press that I've seen are right, people are already starting to get a little bit tired of the election process being 18 months basically constant from now until November 2008. But if you extend that out so that the campaign process goes more than 2 years, at least the public eye portion of the campaign process goes more than 2 years, you may risk alienating more voters, turning people off, and that's always a bad thing.
This is apparently a joke, but I have to share it because we did an internet search just to get some, information on this race to be the first in the nation with a primary. And there's this article we found that said, breaking news, New Hampshire announces its 2012 primary date. And we're like, what? What is this? And it says, the state of New Hampshire announced today that it will hold its 2012 primary election on Tuesday, February 9th, 2009. So, yeah, I mean, it really is getting so. What is the better way, Professor Rackaway? What should happen?
Well, to go back to sort of the idea of why primaries exist in the first place was that there were reformers, the progressives in the late 1800s and early 1900s, thought that the parties had become corrupt. You had urban machine politics that were just as crooked as they could possibly be, and they manipulated away from getting reformers into office. So they really wanted to democratize the process. They wanted to bring you and me into the process of deciding presidential nominees because we had not before. And then they also wanted to reduce the power of the party bosses. And what they did was they did basically an end run around the party organizations in the first place. They shut the parties themselves, the party leadership, out of it. And I think that there is a better way, either in making local accountability, say having real elections for state or county party leaders, and then giving them the power of nomination back so that they present us a candidate, we can find out about them through this process, and it would shorten it considerably. We'd still have accountability on that, and we wouldn't have these unrepresentative primaries, because the other problem that you get is that it's a very limited group of people in each state that actually go out and vote in a primary or participate in a caucus. So the candidates that we see are not representative of people that are appealing to the general population, and that's pushing down our general election turnout. So there's no optimal solution, but anything that maintains the primaries without some sort of central coordination is going to be bad. Unfortunately, there is no optimal solution. There's no magic bullet to this other than perhaps giving the parties more of a role. When the Democrats introduced their superdelegates to the conventions in the 1980s, that had a spark of promise, but then they diluted the power of the superdelegates over time so that the primaries became even more important, and that encouraged this front-loading as well.
Mm-hmm. David in Fond du Lac is with us. Hi, David.
Hi. I think this could be a good thing if it drew enough attention to how the election process itself has kind of broken down over the time that when these primaries came about and things like that, things have changed, conditions have changed, and politics in themselves have changed somewhat, and that impetus that the professor talked about may not be as important as it once was, and maybe what we need is to come up with a way to reform the election process itself, whether it be campaign finance reform, also things like that, that would shape this leapfrogging and things like that, because a lot of this, I think, has to do with each state wanting more attention on their state so that more money, more campaign visits, and things that, like that pour into their state. So if we took away this, you know, large, huge campaign amount of money that is there and said, you know, there are limits on what you can and cannot spend for your campaign, maybe this kind of would go away and we could get back to a better system to even out the playing field or whatever it is for so that four states don't decide an election.
No, what about that, Professor Rackaway?
Well, changing campaign finance laws to improve the primary system is sort of like saying that someone has a heart problem, so let's operate on their leg. Is if you're going to attack the primary, or if you're going to attack the primary problem, attack the primary problem. Campaign finance reform has tended to be as counterproductive a method of legislating politics as you can find. We've got so many campaign finance laws in the book, particularly at the federal level, and all we're seeing is an increase in the amount of money, and in fact, a change in the kind of money that comes in to be less and less democratic. The change away from soft money, which was union and corporate access-driven money, to this playground of the individual rich person with an agenda that you see in the 527s that we've had from 2004 on, should be a warning to you that campaign finance sounds good, but it's sort of like Mario Andretti would say back when he was racing. He would say that things were a great flight plan but a bad landing. When you actually put campaign finance reform into place, it tends to be counterproductive. So I don't agree that campaign finance reform would have any help on the primary system. It's about national coordination. It is about making a process that encourages people to be engaged, not just pushing it towards the more extreme agendas within each party.
Let's end with a little bit of talk on this, the reform that is getting some attention, at least in Congress. I have here that Senator Dianne Feinstein recently announced that she has signed on as a co-sponsor to a bill to reform the presidential primary election process by establishing these rotating regional primaries and caucuses that we discussed earlier. And she will hold a a hearing in a committee that she chairs that deals with these types of reforms in September. Do you think that that this reform has legs?
Well, the Democrats in Congress seem to be behind it. Their problem is getting more Republican support on board. And I don't know, strangely enough, if it would pass the House. Usually the Senate is where reforms mm-hmm. like this go to die, but this one might not be able to pass the House. It's something that, while it's not perfect, if we were to go to a rotating primary system, it wouldn't make things any worse. I don't know how much it would improve things, but it certainly wouldn't make things worse. And most of the proposals that people have discussed or described would actually make things worse. So in that way, it's a perverse bit of an improvement. But at the very least, the rotating aspect of it and the fact that it's regional should keep the money somewhat in check and might also make sure that different areas of the country are represented well. The only problem with it is that it does take away another bit of power that the states have. And what the states are really doing is they're manifesting this in whatever kind of exercise of power they can through an increasingly controlling federal government. They're trying to exercise that as they can. Well, that's sort of the downside.
We'll have to keep an eye on it, and I want to thank you very much for your time.
Always my pleasure. Thank you.
Yes, Chapman Rackaway, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Fort Hays State University in Hays, Kansas. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing this hour, and thanks to Karen Prager for on-air production. As always, thank you for listening and for calling in. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.